The 60-day clock that American negotiators set for Iran to reach a nuclear framework agreement expired yesterday, and this morning Iran's parliament speaker gave a definitive answer. The Strait of Hormuz stays closed until the United States lifts its blockade, removes sanctions, and releases frozen Iranian assets. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has responded by promising what he described as unprecedented economic isolation of Iran. And there are now reports from Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, which we should note is a source that requires careful scrutiny, that internal administration discussions have included nuclear options against Iranian infrastructure. To understand why Hormuz matters so much, you need a few numbers. Roughly 21% of global oil consumption passes through that strait. On an average day before the closure, that was somewhere between 17 and 20 million barrels. The global economy runs on the assumption that that corridor is open. When it isn't, the ripple effects hit refinery input costs in Europe within days, shipping insurance rates spike immediately, and every energy-intensive industry on Earth starts doing emergency calculations.
The political geometry here is genuinely complicated, Marcus. Iran's parliament speaker isn't the supreme decision-making authority, that's Khamenei, but the parliament's position signals that domestic Iranian politics are now aligned behind the closure. There isn't a moderate faction inside Tehran right now with enough leverage to argue for concessions. The sanctions pressure that was supposed to force Iran back to the table has instead created a domestic rally-around-the-flag dynamic. That's a pattern we've seen repeatedly in the history of economic coercion. When the pressure becomes existential, it often unifies rather than fractures the target. And Senator Ossoff's accusation that Trump is lying the U.S. into an Iran war is not just partisan rhetoric in isolation. He cited specific instances of what he called negligence toward deployed troops and mischaracterization of the threat. The White House's response, Trump calling Ossoff a Pee Wee Herman lookalike, tells you something about how the administration is choosing to engage with substantive congressional oversight. That's not a rebuttal to the policy argument, it's a deflection from it.
The green nuclear claim deserves its own careful treatment. She said the Trump administration has been actively discussing nuclear weapons use against Iran. The White House has neither confirmed nor substantively denied this in a way that would put the claim to rest. Now, discussing options in a national security context is not the same as planning to use them. Every president's national security apparatus models scenarios that never happen. But the fact that a sitting House member close to the president's inner circle is saying this publicly is significant. It either reflects real internal discussions, which would be alarming, or it reflects Green operating outside her lane, which creates its own credibility problem for the administration. What the markets are currently pricing in is not a nuclear scenario, they're pricing in a prolonged conventional standoff. Oil prices are elevated. Shipping lanes through the Cape of Good Hope are getting rerouted traffic at enormous cost. The longer the strait stays closed, the more the global economy absorbs a structural energy shock rather than a temporary spike.
There's a historical parallel worth drawing here. When Reagan sent naval escorts through the Gulf in 1987 and 1988 during the Iran-Iraq War, Operation Earnest Will, the strait stayed functionally open because both sides understood the consequences of full closure. The current situation is different because Iran is not a party to a war with a neighbor. Iran itself is the party in direct confrontation with the United States. That removes some of the diplomatic off-ramps that existed in the late 80s. The question I keep coming back to is, what does a face-saving exit look like for Tehran? Khamenei cannot appear to capitulate to American pressure domestically, so any negotiated reopening has to be structured so it doesn't look like surrender. The Bessent, unprecedented isolation language makes that harder, not easier. The more you back someone into a corner rhetorically, the more politically costly it becomes for them to walk out through the door you're holding open.
And the frozen assets question is not trivial. Iran is estimated to have somewhere between $6 and $10 billion in frozen assets across various jurisdictions. That money is a concrete and immediate concession that Iran wants, and it's one the U.S. could theoretically offer on a phased basis tied to verifiable steps toward reopening the strait. Whether that kind of structured de-escalation is even being discussed privately is something we genuinely don't know from the public record. What we do know is that the S&P futures this morning are down, and the Hormuz closure is a significant contributing factor. This is the week the global economy realizes this isn't resolving quickly.